Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy. Welcome to this bite-sized episode in which I take one lesson from one of my previous conversations and have a closer look. Hello, Simon here. Thank you for joining me once again. And I want to start this bite-sized episode with a question. How often do you feel buffeted by events? How often do you feel emotional reactions which are seemingly caused by events that are happening outside of yourself? Well, this episode is all about recognizing that events are, in and of themselves, inherently neutral. It is our beliefs about those events that causes the emotional reactions. In sport, people talk about pressure, but pressure isn't some external force like gravity. It is caused by the way that we interpret what is happening. Now, someone who understood this and explained it very eloquently was Albert Ellis, who pioneered the development of rational emotive behavioral therapy, which is widely considered to be the precursor to cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm a big fan of Ellis's work. For example, he was quite anti-self-esteem, primarily because it is conditional and comparative. Instead, he advocated for radical self-acceptance, as well as acceptance of other people and the world. And in this bite-sized episode, I'm speaking to sports psychologist Helen Davis about Albert Ellis's work, about REBT. And she's someone I think really highly of. She's got a rare ability to explain things in a simple, relatable manner. And in this bite-sized episode, she talks about the difference between rational beliefs and irrational beliefs and why it's really important to pay attention to the language we use as it reveals the underlying beliefs we hold. For example, words like or sayings like I must or I should can cause people to feel pressure, through to catastrophic language like that was a devastating defeat. Is it really devastating though in the big scheme of things? And is it really true that you must succeed? By changing our language, we can change our experience of events and the world, as Helen can explain.
The centre of it really is that irrational and rational beliefs are at the centre of this emotional and behaviour functionality. So what you teach people in REBT is that it's not events that are directly causing emotions and behaviours, but it's actually our beliefs that lead to emotional and behavioural reactions. A lot of people sort of have that association of it's the event that's making me feel like this. Actually, there's a belief behind that. And just kind of really briefly, irrational beliefs are kind of extreme and rigid, illogical beliefs, and they can lead to these dysfunctional emotions, whereas rational beliefs are preferences, they're non-extreme, they're much more flexible and logical.
So what you said there about understanding that it is not an event that causes people to feel a certain way, but it is people's belief about the event that causes them to feel a certain way. So for example, that might be if someone says, you made me angry. Actually, that person hasn't made them angry. It's a belief about something that person's done or said that would be the case. Or if you said, this event made me angry, I don't know, let's say, you know, there's a round of redundancies going on at your work, perhaps you're in line for it. Of course, that's understandable. That might make you feel that anxious. But it's not the round of redundancies that are making you feel anxious. It's your belief about those round of redundancies.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That it is. It's the way that you interpret it that actually gives the feelings that you and the emotional consequence that ends up from that. So how you view the situation, Ellis says, you know, people are not disturbed by things, but by the view that they take of it. So it's the view that you take of that that gives you those emotions.
It's understanding that events in and of themselves are neutral. They have no emotional charge to them whatsoever. It's literally the beliefs and perceptions we have about them. I watched a video of Albert Ellis talking before we chatted, and something he spoke about was radical self-acceptance. And it comes back to that quote that I mentioned earlier about being gentle with yourself while striving to do your best. And a big part of that is just by dint of the fact that you are alive and you are a person, you can't be worthless. So there's a real sort of emphasis, it seems, on separating yourself from what you do and your actions. So the difference between losing a job and being a loser, this seems a really important part of it.
Yes, I think they use the word being a fallible human being, that we are fallible. That's realistic. You know, we are going to make mistakes and we are going to get things wrong, and we're not going to be brilliant at everything that we do. And having an acceptance of that and being patient with ourselves, which I like that word gentle, you know, in the quote, you know, being gentle with yourself. And part of that, I think, is you know, that word patience, I think, and being accepting that I can change the way that I think about a situation and embrace kind of all facets of myself, even the ones that maybe I don't like as much.
Another quick thing I read was three rigid beliefs that people can have, because I did think it was interesting and particularly salient to the world we find ourselves in and the outlook that seems to be really prevalent. The first being, I must perform well and win the approval of other people at all times. The second being, other people must always treat me nicely. If they don't, they're awful and basically deserve to have an awful life. And the third being, the conditions of life must be hassle-free, must be easy, and must be enjoyable. And it's this kind of simplistic and idealistic thinking that is at the root cause of a lot of people's discontent.
Yes, and I think an indicator of that is language that people use. You know, the musts, absolutes, shoulds, have tos, go tos. That kind of language is characterized by those rigid beliefs that you mentioned. And you know, generally, if people are adhering to those rigid beliefs, you know, they tend to hold one or more extreme beliefs. And those are awfulizing, low frustration tolerance, and depreciating thinking.
Let's get into those four then. So why don't we start with awfulizing, just because it's an interesting word, more commonly perhaps now known as catastrophizing.
That's when something is deemed to be 100% bad. It's the worst thing ever. You can characterize by language like that. You know, it's absolutely, truly awful, and it's no good. So I'm sure that, you know, people listening can resonate with some of these, because you tend to hear people talking like this a lot of the time. You know, we sometimes say the making a mountain out of a molehill, but that we do embellish, we do use words that make things maybe sound worse than they actually are. You know, and sometimes, you know, when I work with clients, I might say to them, you know, I'm interested that you use the word, you know, devastating or the worst thing ever. If you switched on the news and listened to a certain story, would you describe that as devastating? How's that in the same way? And I look at how people kind of rank themselves. I mean, I do this in sport, obviously, and then people suddenly think, oh, yes, I'm using the same language to talk about, you know, losing a race as I was to talk about, you know, this story that's happening on the news. And actually, that's a far bigger thing that's going on in the world at the moment. And it's just the way that you're perceiving it. But the language that people use can actually kind of elevate their emotions when they talk about it, because it's very emotive language.
The example that comes to mind was Annie Vernon and Catherine Granger and the rest of the crew in 2008, who won a silver medal in rowing. Annie and Catherine, who were kind enough to come on the podcast and talk about their experience and how it felt something like a bereavement, because they felt like they must win, they had to win. And it's quite actually difficult seeing them up on the podium, because you could see the anguish that they were in. But so I suppose that was some unexamined catastrophizing thinking, or this, we must win. And when they didn't, it felt so awful. Whereas actually winning a Olympic silver medal is still a stunning achievement.
Yes, and I think that's why, you know, sort of this irrational thinking and irrational language can be very common in sport, because when athletes are, you know, devoting, you know, all of their time to achieve their goals, that somehow if they're not using this kind of language, they think it can make people think that it doesn't matter so much, they don't care as much. So the language kind of shifts into this kind of demand type language and musts and have to's and shoulds. And actually that can then be actually detrimental to their performance, because it can elevate feelings of pressure.
So must, shoulds, what was the other one? Must,
yeah, should. Must, shoulds, have to's, absolute shoulds, have to's, go to's.
That falls under rigid demands, does it?
Yeah, rigid demands. So the more rational language to use there would be, you know, I would like to, and it might be I would really like to, I wish to, I want to, I would prefer to.
Which hints at that you'd be able to cope with it if it doesn't happen.
Yes, because it's not saying it absolutely has to be so, which is what that language indicates.
And a simple switch of language like that, to what degree can that change someone's experience of an upcoming event, whether it be sporting or otherwise, then just changing from I must do this to I want to do this? How big of an impact can that have?
Having gone through this process with a number of athletes now, I really can see the benefit of just a simple changing of one word can have on somebody, which is why I find it so fascinating. For athletes talk about getting more enjoyment out of their sport. I would say that's probably one of the number one things that people say, having gone through talking through a framework, is that actually I enjoyed it more. I didn't have as many feelings of pressure. I was able to appreciate what I was doing more.
Thank you for listening to this bite-sized episode with Helen Davis, talking about the work of Albert Ellis. And if you'd be interested to hear the full-length episode with Helen, it is in the back catalogue and I will link to it in the show notes. As ever, I'd be delighted to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions. Get in touch via my website, simonmundy.com. Thanks to everyone who's already been in touch with suggestions. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter, which is called Monday on Monday. If you could as well, please share this episode with anyone you think might benefit from hearing it. Then I would be immensely grateful. And a kind rating and review is always much appreciated too. Anyway, that's it for now. Have a great weekend. Until next time, goodbye.
Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.